So before we jump into this episode, Tash and I would like to acknowledge that the words that we will be saying are purely based on our own experiences in terms of body. A lot of those experiences come from a place of privilege, with us both being white and able-bodied. Tash and I would like to encourage you, dear listener, to actively seek out voices and experiences that aren't your own, and to listen to this episode with a lot of caution and self-care, and to be gentle with yourself, because we will be talking about things that make not only us very uncomfortable, but the whole world really uncomfortable.
Hi, my name's Tash and I'm an alcoholic.
And my name's Caitlin and I am not an alcoholic, and this is an exploratory podcast looking at alcoholism, addiction, mental health, and all the things that make us question,
why am I like this?
Tash, how are you?
Yeah, look, it's been a weird couple of days. As you know, it's nice to see you, even if it's over a computer screen. It's still nice. What have you been up to?
I was going to say, we did see each other the other day at like a safe distance.
Socially distant chat.
Yeah. What have I been up to? Ooh, still working from home.
Still enjoying it?
That's fine. My back is currently a little fucked, which is not fun. Essentially need a new mattress, is still in a hunt for that. If you follow me online, you'll see me post about that. But I've moved my like workspace area out onto the dining table just because there are like benches that I can sit on with proper back support, or better back support rather. Yeah, I still get, it's just a lot of online shopping going on.
Yes.
Yeah. I get deliveries every time I'm in meeting every time.
Sorry guys.
Yeah, it's like, sorry, I just need to like a loud ringing like goes to the apartment. I'm like, I'll be right back, and then I like rush over and I'm like, hello. Yeah. And I'm like, it's a delivery, and I'm like, I'll be there in a second. Then I rush back, I'm like, I'll be right back again, and then I go downstairs.
I'm just stimulating the economy.
Yeah. And then I come again, like wash my hands, and then I'm like, oh hello, and they're like, what did you get? And then I do an unboxing for whoever I'm talking to. Because people are always interested. They're like, oh, what did you get in the post?
Yeah, people need highlights.
Exactly.
That's all we've got these days.
Yeah, and it's usually earrings or Star Wars books.
Oh, look, good for you.
No in between.
Do what you need to.
Yeah. What about you? How have your past couple weeks been?
Yeah, good. It's nice to be back in the swing of recording, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I didn't realise of what a good milestone in my week it was, of just kind of keeping me on track, and it really makes me reflect on things week to week as opposed to feeling like I'm living Groundhog Day over and over and over again.
Yeah,
you know, I've got these opportunities to talk about how I feel, and often, as always has sort of been with this podcast, I start the episode not knowing where we're going, and by the end of it I'm like, well, shit. Who knew? So yeah, I'm definitely cautious and excited, I guess, to get into today's chat. This was something that I think was sparked due to the obscene increase in, I guess, diet culture that I've seen online, in terms of, you know, don't let isolation make you fat, don't let COVID force you to eat, and all these other insane sort of messages that we're getting. Are you finding that you're getting quite a lot of that?
No, just because... Well, so I am quite meticulous and particular about who I follow online, and a few years ago found that I was following a lot of accounts that I didn't necessarily agree with, and a couple of weeks ago I had the same sort of thing where I was like, who are all these people? My feed isn't what I want it to be, and I've just like, I will cull who I follow on Instagram, and a lot of the people I follow are quite politically aware and like positive and all this kind of stuff. And quite diverse. So anything in terms of COVID-19 and the body was very much like, it's okay if your body changes during this time.
Yeah,
like, do not put that pressure on yourself. For me, like, diet culture and this kind of stuff and like body is something that I'm actively thinking about like every moment of my life.
Yeah.
Which is a lot.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of people who it does really consume their entire identity. Which is, of course, when being forced into a pandemic, if your weight and your body image is something that consumes you day to day, imagine that amplified tenfold. And then imagine being surrounded by people who all have an opinion on diets and weight and blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, all these home exercises you can do. And like, I just don't want to. Yeah, I don't want to feel bad about not wanting to either. Like, I just, yeah, it's hectic. And I guess what's upsetting me most about it is that I'm seeing quite a lot of what I would consider to be middle class, white, privileged, female identifying people making money from this, or exploiting the body image movement for their personal gain, to promote their business, to promote their products. I guess I kind of see it the same way as greenwashing almost, when companies try really hard to make it look like they're eco-conscious. Yes, your design is from a local designer, but it was still made by slaves who, you know, are in terrible working conditions. It's almost like that. Is there a word for that? Like, not greenwashing or like pink washing, but, you know, like.
Yeah.
Thin washing. I don't know what it's called, but yeah, I guess I've been noticing a lot, and it's been upsetting me, and it's been upsetting me how, especially over school holidays, how many young people those things are targeted at, and how many of them are absorbing these really confusing and negative body image sort of issues.
Yeah. Mm. And it's hard because like we've been having a lot of conversations, I think, separately with like different people. I was having a conversation with someone this morning about all of this, talking about how like the body positive and body image movements, and how it was started by like fat black women, and it has been taken, like a lot of other movements, particularly like queer movements, by people who aren't necessarily impacted by it in the same way that those who started it are.
I think that's a pretty common theme when it comes to political movements, or, I mean, everything is political in the current climate, but I think that's really, really rife, is that the people who movements are started for very quickly fall into the background of those movements, and their voices get lost.
Yeah.
It happens, you know, I think when it comes to Indigenous culture within Australia, that's the first thing that I think of, is like the whitewashing of absolutely everything in our entire culture. And I guess the way that impacts our Indigenous Australians, and the way that they're treated because of that. It's all very nuanced and convoluted, but
yeah,
something that I think definitely needs discussing.
Yeah. And it's harder when you put it in the context of body, because your body is something that you can't escape. Your body, essentially, you just can't. It's always there. Yeah. You're stuck with it, which is such negative languaging around my body.
But like, that's how I feel about addiction. Like, I feel like it's always there. I can never get away with it. Like, no matter how much I learn about it, no matter how much I try and better myself, or, you know, read texts or whatever, my mental health is always there. My addiction is always there. It will never go away. It's, yeah, you can't escape it. It's like a prison. Yeah.
But it's also a thing, like, there's that extra layer, literally, of, in terms of your body and other people's opinions, like, you cannot hide your body from other people, but you can. Addiction, poor mental health, anything like that. There's a protective barrier that you can put in place.
Really valid point.
But with body, you can't.
Yeah, it's so visual. It's so visual, yeah.
Exactly. And you never really know what's going on in other people's heads, or what other people are thinking about you. And then you just kind of magnify that in your own head. And it doesn't help when you then have like very negative representation and everything you see in terms of like BMI, which is fucked anyway and was never used to be put in the health system.
So BMI is your body mass index. Basically, it's a quote unquote scientific, quote unquote mathematical way to work out whether or not your body size is at a healthy weight relevant to your age and height. Obviously, this doesn't take into consideration a whole host of things that affect the way that we look. It really shouldn't be used as such practical science as it is being used. I know in my, you know, very, very recent experiences, I have been starting a discussion about having a breast reduction, and no surgeon will even have me for a consultation because my BMI says that I am obese. I am not obese.
No. Quick fun fact. BMI was derived from a simple math formula from the 1830s by a Belgian astronomer, mathematician, statistician, and sociologist. Nothing about that. Good. Any other expressions have to do with health of the body?
Good.
What?
Cooked. So basically what we're saying is BMI is trash.
Yes.
Don't calculate your BMI. Don't judge others based on theirs. Forget about it. Pretend it doesn't exist. It's a hoax.
Yeah, there was Yes, I agree with that. there was a thing that I saw, and I wish for the life of me I remembered who it was from, but it was something I saw on Instagram. I either read it or a photo or I listened to it. I actually genuinely can't remember where I got it from, but trying to think of your body as a living organism, because that's what it is. And this thing that, like, Tash is making a face, but it's that thing of, like, your body is, it's the same way of plants. Like, plants, when something isn't right, they will react to it, or they'll change if you nourish it, et cetera, et cetera. And your body is the exact same thing. A lot of thinking that I'm trying to do in terms of body is trying to change that into this thing of, like, oh, I have to live with this. But it's been like, no, you live in it and you live with it and it is living with, like, it's a living thing, dude. Yeah. Like, be nice to your body.
I thought it was really interesting that you referred to us both being able-bodied at the beginning, because technically we both have disabilities, technically.
Mm.
But isn't it curious that you would not identify as that?
No. Because, like, anyway, realistically...
I just thought it was so interesting.
Yeah. Well, like, it doesn't... Like, my disability is...
Endometriosis. I'm sorry. Do we need to bring Ruby back in?
Like, I don't consider it as that. Like, and I am able to, like, endometriosis is not considered, like, it's not. And it doesn't put restrictions in my life the same way other disabilities do. And I know that that is comparing, but realistically, it has not impacted my life. It does not impact the things that I have privilege to. Like, I do not have to think about it every time I leave the house.
I would argue with that. And okay. I would say that because this is still not for podcasts, but I would say that it does affect you because there are days when you can't go to work. There are days when you have, like, maybe want to go home. Like, and look, just something that I thought was really curious because I obviously have a really hard time admitting a disability as well.
Yeah.
And it's really been Ruby's constant kind of, it's internalized ableism. It's the same way it's internalized skinny people. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's, anyway, it was just something that I thought was really interesting.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't consider you to have a disability either, but I would consider you to have something that is debilitating.
Yeah.
Obviously not at all times, but.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Mm.
Anyway. okay. So I think we think about having our bodies as such a negative thing that we have to carry around with us and we have to carry around this flesh prison, but actually you get to be in a beautiful skin-covered sack of organs, and that cool sack of organs lets you do all the amazing things that you get to do with your life.
Mm.
But in saying that, I would also consider myself somebody who is not very in tune with their body. I think I relate to Annie a lot in that way, where I feel like I'm just a bit of a pair of eyes floating around, like I'm not very conscious of my actual physical form. You know, interesting.
Yeah, that's disassociation, Tash.
I realize that, but I think it's just because it doesn't. So something I said before we started this podcast is I mentioned to Caitlin that I had far bigger body issues when I was drinking than now that I don't.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's because, I guess, when I was drinking, I was going out all the time. I was always dressing up, putting on a face and objectively judging myself for the way I looked. Was it acceptable to go out like that? Yada, yada. I don't know. It felt like so much part of my identity. And then when I got sober and I realized there were so many more awful things about me than just my weight, like, that's how it felt though, you know, like none of the body stuff could even shine a light to the pain, I guess, that I felt from everything else. Like, it was so irrelevant. And I feel like I was also in a relationship at the time with somebody who suffered from body dysmorphia, and I didn't realize how often there were conversations around that.
Mm.
I really hadn't noticed the sort of toxic body conversations that I was having almost on a daily basis and how that was subconsciously affecting me. And then when I was no longer in that relationship and I was sober and I realized there was so much more going on, yeah, I guess I kind of have, like, disassociated from my body in a way. Like, don't know what size clothes to buy. I don't know what my style is. I don't know what suits me. And I guess from someone who's, I guess, as fashion-centric as I appear to be, that might sound a bit strange.
Mm.
But I think that's almost why I dress so outlandishly, because it really doesn't matter to me. Like, I'm like, oh, this is fun and this makes me smile and this makes me laugh and, yeah, let's put it all together. Like,
Yeah.
Doesn't make me, and there's no real thought there of, oh, but do I look fat or do I look this or do I look that? Like, I just go, oh, well, I look bright.
Wow.
I look bright and I look happy and that's it.
Okay. See, all those things that you just mentioned, and so it's like, do I look like this? Do I look like this? I think about that every single day, like genuinely every day. And that influences so many of the things that I do, like the photos that I post, what I wear, the clothes that I buy, like how I feel leaving the house, whether or not I feel like I need to put on makeup. Like, it's genuinely this filter that is just stuck in my brain and I put everything through it.
Yeah.
Like everything. That's really, and it's full on. So exhausting. But
a lot of people live like that. Like most, I would say most people, especially, you know, female identifying young women, this is something that, you know, in high school, God, like it's, you know, it's obsessive. It can be people's entire lives. Yeah, it can be the entire culture, some friendship circles.
Yeah.
You know, that's all that matters, and diets and this and that. And
yeah, I think for me it was a thing that I was thinking, like I've been thinking about it since like primary school. Like if there was one big thing in my life that was a defining like thought process, it's definitely been around my body, because it doesn't help that I'm also like, I've always stuck out because I've been a little bit bigger, but also because I'm taller than genuinely everyone.
Yeah. How tall are you, just for listener reference?
I'm 187 centimeters. It's like 6'1.5".
Yeah.
So quite tall. And I come from a tall family. I come from a bigger family as well. Like both my parents struggle with body image and like body related stuff.
Quickly on that, is that something you noticed as a child, like in a family home?
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
Because I think so much of that has to do with how we grow up looking at our bodies, like what our parents and, you know, what our role models said about theirs.
Yeah, definitely. I don't want to delve too much into it because I think a lot of that is stuff that my parents are still processing and still working through, and is their own experiences to speak of. So I can only speak of my own.
Totally fair.
From that. But it's a thing that I was like always made to be conscious of through my parents, and probably like set down a lot of that framework and groundwork, which is like their own issues that they passed on to their children, which is okay. And we've had a conversation about that. And
with
how
your
much
parents?
Yeah, particularly with my mum, because it's something she still thinks about quite a lot. And it's really hard. Oh, I love it. She's doing a lot of unlearning at the moment, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
And I think she's gotten a lot of that from me and my own trying to like not care about it as much and try to change the way that I think about my own body. Yeah. Oh, this all makes me feel very uncomfortable. I don't know
it's
if you can see
it. Yeah. I'm sweating.
Yeah, same. Yeah. Sweating. And I just like feel so anxious and I just need to be like stretched out. Yeah. But it's just like, oh my God, what was I saying? Yeah. Something that, it's stuff that sticks with you, especially as children in terms of body, because like it's always there. Like I vividly remember comments that other people have made on my body from like 13 years ago, which when I was like 10. Like what the fuck? That's smart.
They're formative. Yeah,
yes.
They're formative things.
Ah.
So you've got to be so careful. So I guess the thing, like coming back to the thing that started this all, my biggest issue is, and I suppose when it comes down to it, the real crux of the issue is people not acknowledging their privilege.
Yeah.
So I think it's really important. And if the discussions that I've had over the last couple of days, and I'm sure you feel the same, if they've shown me anything, it's that the consistent messaging is that everybody of every shape, size, and identity needs a role model and needs someone to identify with and who looks like them. They need representation. That's been the most clear thing to me. And I believe that everybody of all different types should be able to give that representation. I do think, however, that if you are, you know, I'm going to say on the thin fat spectrum between maybe like a 10 and a 12, these are kind of the people that I'm talking about who are not acknowledging their thin privilege, and they are, you know, giving these workshops and loving yourself. And it's like, all you have to do is love yourself. And it's like, okay, cool. What are the practical skills? Like what, tell me about your experience of not being allowed on an airplane because you won't fit in a seat. Like, tell me about your experience of, you know, not getting a job because you don't meet like a physical standard. Tell me your experience about going into a shop and having nothing in the entire entire department store even come close to fitting you. If you can't tell me about those experiences, then you need to acknowledge that and say, I have never lived through X, Y, Z.
Yeah.
This is my privilege, X, Y, Z. This is how I have overcome my personal specific issues.
Mm.
I don't think it's right that these completely unqualified influencers basically are giving life, body, diet, and motivational advice. Like, yeah. Sorry, not just giving the advice. The giving advice is one thing. It's charging money for the advice. The issue is a lot of these people are also being paid by the beauty industry as being plus size models. So don't come into a workshop and tell me about how the industry is fucked and it promotes unhealthy standards and blah, 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 while you are still being paid by that industry and being paid by the people that you're preaching to.
Yeah.
That's not that far off from cult leaders, right? Mm. It's not right to me. I feel like that's what led me to want to say something. And I guess that's really what opened up the can of worms. And then that was a really interesting discussion that you and I have had about that. You then opened up the discussion on your Instagram platform. Do you want to have a bit of a chat about the different kinds of feedback we got, some other people's experiences and yeah.
Yeah, definitely. The conversations that I've had in my inboxes have been, what have they been like? They've been very passionate. Personal. Not really. I think, yeah, passionate in the sense of like it's of people's own experiences. They've been very much people sharing their own experiences of living in their bodies as fat people, what body positivity means. There's been a couple of people who have asked questions aware of their privilege of being like thinner bodies and asking how to best support those who aren't of the same body types as them and like how to be allies, which is a really interesting.
That's interesting.
Yeah, that's it's really super good. Interesting.
I definitely didn't have anyone. I had, yeah, that's so interesting. I had not a single person asked how to be a better ally to me or asked what they could do. That's really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's unfortunately something I don't know the answer to, but I'm going to actively seek out and try to find, because I think it's important to be having these conversations and for people who are fat and plus sized and like on that whole spectrum to be talking about it, but also for those who don't, like who have privilege and who don't experience it's the same things, to still be part of that conversation and to like build up those who need to be in the kind of spotlight of that, in the same way of like any movement. Like if you do not have a marginalized voice or a marginalized within that, then you step aside and you hand the mic over and you advocate for those spaces when other people who are affected by that aren't in those spaces. Like that is the role of an ally. Thank you. So there's been, a couple conversations happening around that. There's been a lot about kind of moving through the world and how being fat has kind of like colored the people's experiences. A lot about a lack of, I was having a really good conversation about representation and wanting to see this like normalization of other bodies, which is something that I've been thinking about quite a bit the last week or so, because I started, oh my God, have you seen Shrill?
No.
Okay, so I started watching Shrill last week. And if you're in Australia, it's on, I think it's either ABC, Ivy or SBS, so it's free to watch. And it's based off this book that was written, I think, in 2016, like autobiography. I can't remember the woman's name, but it's like Shrill, How to Be a Loud Woman or something, about this fat woman talking about her experiences as a comedian and all this kind of stuff. And they've turned it into this series. And oh my God, I cried. I cried watching this show like repeatedly just because I was seeing bodies that weren't the quote unquote like Hollywood standard norm on screen.
Yeah. You don't realize how shocking it is until you see it.
Exactly.
And it's really, I feel the same. Like when I see an Indigenous person, I'm like, a person of color. It's shocking to the point where you want to make a song and dance about it. Like,
yes. And I think for me watching that, it was seeing myself represented on screen. Yeah, which was just a time. So that's something we're talking about a bit. Also talking about like dating and sexual experiences as a fat person, particularly like how queerness plays into that as well.
And what about like fetishism? Because did that come up at all?
It came up this morning with a particular person asking about like if a fat person like posts a like sexual or like risque photo themselves online, like if the response to that is like overwhelmingly like, yes, you go, et cetera, like quite sexualized. I think for me, you can either see that through like two lenses of either, yes, it is like almost a fetishization of it. And there's a community of people, usually men, who kind of place that on a pedestal and like are quite gross about it. But then I think there's also this other thing of like, oh, people viewing it through a lens of like, oh, you have so much courage to be posting
that. You're so brave.
So I'm going to like hype you up because like you need this extra motivation. Yeah. And it's.
And do you know what it is as well? I seriously think that there's a big part of it, especially on Instagram and online culture. I think there's a big thing of smaller brands. Again, I keep bringing this back to business because I guess that's my main issue is people making money from this kind of thing. But so I feel like there are some people who comment and hype so that they are visually seen to being a fat ally.
Yeah.
And I think it's more of like a, almost like a power play kind of, it's all for show. It's a facade. And I think that that's very true with feminism as well. Like pinkwash feminism and greenwashing and all those things we've talked about before, where it's really easy for people to appear to give a shit. A comment here, a reshare here, just because you share a picture of a fat body doesn't mean you're an ally, doesn't mean you understand, and doesn't mean that you have any idea of what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yes, representation is important, but don't share because you think you have to. I guess it only works if these interactions are genuine.
Yeah.
That's the only way that we can change.
I'd be interested into knowing what you think when you see like images like that of like fat people in like lingerie and like this, that like sexual imaging. Like, what do you think when you see a photo of that?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting because this has got me, I feel like everyone's super thirsty in lockdown. So I'm seeing so much more sexualized content from almost all of my followers, which is, you know, if I can get it, but it has made me really realize, I guess, sort of what we were saying earlier, that I have no attachment to my own body.
Okay.
Like, am I sexy? Like, could I be the sex kitten? Like, it just doesn't compute in my brain. Like, I can't, when I visualize myself in my brain, my body is this body dysmorphia? Like, my body like fluctuates in my brain. Like, it's almost like it's jelly, and whatever outfit that I put on myself in my mind's eye, it's not fixed
to
a shape. Does that make sense? So like I'll envision myself, like that's sort of how I get dressed in the morning, how I plan my outfits. I'll pick a key item. So it might be, I'm going to wear my strawberry hat today.
Mm-hmm.
And then the whole outfit is built around the strawberry hat. So as I'm doing this in my brain, it's like more splodges of color and like taste and stuff. Like, I've got synesthesia as well, so like that's a part of it, I think. But yeah, I'm more envisioning like a feel and a look of an outfit, like a vibe, rather than how my physical form looks.
Yeah.
And so like I see these, like, you know, I can see objectively, like I'm looking at it and I'm like, I know objectively that's a sexy photo, like I can see, but I can see like it's, I'm sure that that is attractive, but it doesn't matter what size, shape, amount of nudity, gender, race, whatever. I still am looking at it objectively. Wow. Like, I find it really hard to, but also is that maybe like, I feel like I've always been like that. And I feel like maybe that could be a bit to do with like my pansexuality as well. Like, it's kind of like cool, but also I don't really care. Like, if it was a picture of you fully clothed, I'd also be into it. Like, what's the vibe though?
Yeah. There are two different strands of, like, two different thoughts that definitely need to be unpacked in what you just said. and one of them being the way that you visualize your body in your head is that jelly. It's a weird sentence to say. That's just what you said. Like, so if we compare that thinking to the way that I think of myself in terms of like trying to like plan out an outfit in my head, which I do like most of the time, it's very much a thing of like, cool, like I'll do this and this, but then how does that look on my body, and trying to visualize that. And then what I see in my head is probably different to what I then see in the mirror. And then there's like a skewed lens on top of that that's just been like coding and added on by representation and whatever, and like negative thinking, whatever. There's still that physical form. So I think that thinking, I didn't know you had synesthesia. I didn't know that.
That, yeah, I didn't know either. Somebody at Lush taught me. It wasn't until I told them that the bath bomb smelled wrong that they were like, what? And I was like, well, this should definitely be a green bath bomb. Like, and then I learned all about Mark Constantine and synesthesia. And if you don't know what synesthesia is, I highly recommend you guys look it up because fucking wow.
Lord has it.
I mean, that makes sense, actually.
Yeah, because then you listen to her music and you're just like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's a really brief description of synesthesia? Like the mixing of senses, I guess. So as an example, somebody asked me this question, and this is sort of how it became evident, I guess, that I have this thing. So I smelt this bath bomb and it was orange and it was fizzing away. And I said, oh my God, don't you think this bath bomb should be green? And she said, what do you mean? I was like, well, it smells green, obviously. Just what do you mean?
Quick side note, which bath bomb was this?
It was a Christmas special, like 3 years ago. I want to say it was like a Clementine and something.
Yep. I know which one you're talking about.
I'm never going to know, but I was adamant that it should be green. And every time I opened my eyes and saw the orange, I was like, no, like this is really wrong. And it really kind of like unsettled me and I couldn't work out what that feeling was. And then somebody said, oh, you maybe have synesthesia. I'd never heard of it. Went home and I did this online, do you have synesthesia quiz? And it came and all of the answers was all of the questions were multiple choice and they were so easy. I was like, yes, yes, obviously, of course. Yep. Finished it. And it was like, well, you obviously have synesthesia. I was like, wait, what? So I made my partner do it. And his answers to almost all of the questions were like A, B. And then D was always, I do not understand what is being described here. And he was always like, D, I have no idea. I have no. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
And it was the big one. I remember doing this quiz with him and I said, does the letter zero have a particular color to you? And in my brain, see, you're pulling your face, but in my brain, I can instantly see.
No, it's because you said letter and then letter a number. And a number. Yeah.
So like, does the number zero have a particular like look or personality or vibe or gender, right? And I can tell you definitively the answer is yes. It is white. It has like, it is not a circular zero. It's like, yeah, I know exactly what it looks like. I can draw it for you and I can tell you what kind of personality it has. My partner was like, what are you talking about? A zero is a zero. And I was like, yeah, but a zero is a bit badass, right? And I start like describing his personality and he's like, no. And then I was like, yeah, but, and then the next question is, you do not assign a personality, but you can imagine one. And I said to him, okay, imagine giving a person. And he just couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And he was like, it's not a thing. And I was like, no, but, and it's like, I feel like I've always been like that. Like there was always certain coat hangers that I felt bad for because I didn't get to put my best dresses on them. Do you know what I mean? Like these, it's such an insane way of thinking and actually says a lot about me. And I think it makes me make a lot more sense as an artist and as the creative that I am. But yeah, highly recommend you all look up synesthesia and then let's discuss little tangent there.
Do a quiz. Yeah. So then the other thought coming from that was around the way that you view stuff online and almost like that objectiveness from that, which I think is different to the way that you view your own body and could be tied to like pansexuality and how you like view things, like view people and bodies in terms of what they mean to you and like the input that they have in your life.
Yeah. Like I think I look at them more like art pieces.
Yeah. Okay.
And I'm kind of like, ooh, like I like the composition of this photo rather than, oh, I like love that photo.
Yeah.
But actually, so Ruby, who we spoke with a few interviews ago, has recently shared some truly incredible photos of them. I'm going to describe them as being sexy photos.
In the overalls?
No, this is the hotel room suite. So there's all these flowers and it's so incredible. And Ruby showed me these photos and objectively I could see, wow, love this. I love the colorway. I love the layout. I love the styling. I love the staging. I love Ruby's face. But it was really Ruby's their personality, their themness that made me love it so much, you know? And it was almost like I wasn't really looking at the body and the rest of the image. It was that smile and that feeling and that joy that you could see. That's what I'm looking at when I look at those photos. I'm looking at how those people feel.
Yeah.
And I guess it's because I look back at a lot of my old photos and I can see that I am dead behind the eyes. There's no one there. Like, and I guess that's what I'm looking for in these photos. Like,
yeah.
a fucking light on, like are you doing this for you, you know? I don't know.
No, I get that. Intense. So I look at first, like I look at photos of myself, I look at photos of other people, and the first thing I think of is body, like genuinely the first thing I think of.
But think of what, in what way?
Like, all right, cool, that is a body. What does that look like? What does that look like in relation to me?
Okay, so like it's a comparable thing.
I think so, yeah.
Okay. And then do you have negative or positive connotations to that? Like if you look at someone who's objectively thin, like a size, let's say a size 6 sexy photograph, do you look at that and then compare that body to your body and feel bad?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Definitely. But I also don't have those photos in my feed.
Great. Totally
I just
great.
Like make sure. Yeah.
Also, you get exposed to them anywhere, like on the bus stop, on your phone, on Facebook. You know, like I don't necessarily mean the media that you choose to surround yourself, but more the media that is thrust upon you.
Yes, definitely. And then if I look at a bigger size body and I see that in lingerie, I'm like, oh my God, that's amazing. They look great. What would I look like that?
Okay.
And then it would either be this thing of like, if they can do it, I can do it, or I could never do that, et cetera, et cetera.
Let's talk about that. If they can do it, I can do it. Like what does the picture look like to make you kind of have that thought and feeling? Is it usually someone that's larger than you or that you perceive to be larger than you?
I think it's definitely not anyone smaller than me.
Yeah,
maybe larger, but I don't think I have a full conscious awareness of my own size in relation to other people.
Oh, truly, yeah.
That changes so much.
I'm constantly asking to borrow clothes from people who are like, Tash, this won't fit you in either one way or the other. You know, like my sister is like a tiny, tiny, tiny little skeletal thing. And I'm constantly trying to borrow her clothes. It's never going to happen.
Yeah.
But in my brain, because I can't see where my jelly body fits, I just see my sister looking great in that look and I go, oh, I want to, I mean, let's be real, the only time I want to borrow her clothes is when I'm going to something very dark and mysterious. But, you know, when I want to channel my sister in my brain, well, why can't I just wear all the things she wears?
No, it's not. But it's interesting because, like, I would love to have that. I'd love to have, like, friends who I can swap clothes with and stuff like that. But in some cases can. Because, like, I have friends who, like, are of a similar body type to me. Yeah, I don't even know. It's weird. It's weird. It's not weird. It's normal. Everyone probably has this thinking.
It's so normal.
Yeah. But it's fucked that we're all thinking about this when it's all just, like, if we're all thinking about our bodies negatively, what does that say about our culture and the things that we're watching and the things that we're consuming and the languaging that's out there? Oh my God.
It's really, really difficult because, like, I would consider you and I to be two very self-aware people.
Yeah.
I would say that is not the norm, especially for a lot of younger people who have less life experience.
Yeah.
And for them to be surrounded by the same things that we're impacted by. And if you imagine how much it impacts you, consider how that might be impacting a 12-year-old girl who only has skinny, you know, school friends. Maybe they've never even really been exposed to any other bodies before. They don't have an Instagram. They don't have anyone to look up to. Like, I think it's like the younger generation that I'm very, that's what concerns me. And I guess I see myself, well, we're all role models and we're all leaders to someone, whether you like it or not. There is someone that looks up to you. And I think that's a really, not to put too much pressure on everyone, but I think that it's really important that you remember that. And that you are people's role models and that your actions and your choices and the things that you say, like people are watching and are modeling their behavior on you. And so when I do kids' parties, for example, I make a conscious effort not to wear any, if a tiny bit, like makeup. And I don't really make a big effort with my hair. And I speak to them like little adults and I give them the benefit of the doubt and I put trust in them and I really just let them go for it. And it's I think it's important because when I was younger I used to do a lot of like princess and fairy parties and things, and they were so, it was so much a part of getting dressed up and looking like this beautiful princess. And so many of the kids at the end of the party, they want to hug and kiss you and they're like, you're so beautiful, you're so pretty, I want to be a princess, oh my god. And at the time, obviously, it felt, you know, I was like a teenager and it was an ego boost having these kids tell me they thought I was pretty. But as an adult, I'm like, it's so irrelevant. Like, I wish they'd said to me, like, I had so much fun today, or this is my favorite game, or I learned this. And so I guess it's so much more important in everything I do now of just trying to be a good role model, I guess.
Yeah.
To my past self and others around me.
With body stuff, I think age like is an important factor, and it's really important for younger people to have a wide and diverse range of representation and role models to look up to. But I think because your body is something you live with all the time, everyone lives with it, it's a thing that you carry with you for your whole life, and those negative thinkings that may start when young continue out through your age and when you get older. And body is very much a thing that like everyone feels like they have an opinion of it, especially towards like an opinion on other people's bodies. And a lot of older people are affected by that, particularly like older plus size women and plus size men. Oh my God, men. Men in terms of body positivity are just not involved in the conversation. Mm-hmm. And that stresses me out so much, and they need to be like so much.
Yeah. It's and a feminist same, issue. Like
it's yeah. Honestly. But at the same time, feminism is a movement for all. It's
absolutely
yeah. Like a lot of the comments that I get that are public, when I do get a comment about my body, and luckily they've been quite positive in the last few years, have been very much from older women who come up to me and be like, you're amazing. Like you look like, well, no, just more like the way that you hold yourself is quite like amazing and like standing upright. And I think my height comes into it quite well. Oh my God. I get so many comments on my height because I'm tall and I am a woman. Hoi. I left home the same breath. I mean, like many more representation, but also men need to stop.
If that is in a mood.
I am, especially like working in retail environments, not even retail, like just like hosting and like throughout the festival and that kind of stuff. The amount of men who ask me how tall I am, like, why do you need to know? Genuinely, yeah. What does this affect the interaction that we have? Like, is it something to do with your like inferior? Like, oh, oy, this is a rant and a half that I will have one day.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Especially dating and online, like dating and body stuff is a whole other, we could do a whole 3 hours on that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think it's a thing that like it affects everyone of all ages, and that representation needs to not only be for younger people, but for older people as well of all ages. Like even my grandmother on the phone the other day was like, oh, I've been like, so like I haven't like been moving a lot because I've been like unhealthy. So I've like put on a bit of weight, and I'm like, granny, that doesn't matter. Like like I do not care. You shouldn't care. You're 86 for God's sake. Yeah. Like, come on. That's my rant.
I guess that's like, I saw it was a little while ago now. Someone on my Facebook had shared a thing that was like, do you really want to, you know, be in your 80s or 90s, whatever. And looking back and saying, oh, I wish I'd gone in the water. Like, I wish I'd gone to the beach.
Mm.
I wish I'd done this. I wish I'd done that. But you didn't because of your, you know, your body and how you perceive yourself and it not being good enough to be in public and all those experiences that you missed out on because you didn't feel like you were worthy to be there. Like, that's fucking heartbreaking.
But I think it's also a thing of, like, yes, be unapologetic and don't let those things stop you. But also if you are a person who is at a beach or at a pool and looking at someone and being like, oh, you shouldn't be here, you need to stop that thinking. And
you are the problem.
Yeah, exactly. And like figure out why you're thinking that and do a lot of that unlearning. Yeah, because it's the same with any movement. The person who is at the center and who it's for shouldn't be the ones who do all the work. Like, the burden shouldn't fall on them. Mm-hmm. It's not their fault that the world is fucked. It's the world's fault, and the world needs to do that and support everyone.
And I think this is where a lot of people get confused because they hear people from within the movement say things like that.
Yeah.
And then when we say things like, don't take the mic, they can't see the middle ground, you know? And I feel like that's quite common where people say, oh, well, you don't want us to take the mic and you don't want us to speak for you. But then when I try and say something, I'm doing it wrong. And it's like, again, like you're just being called out for your shitty behavior and that's offended you. And that's fine. But like, it's, I don't know, obviously people have a real problem with sort of admitting when they're wrong or when they've said something maybe offensive or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I think curious.
In that case, it's very much a thing of like, don't question what you're doing when I'm in the room, question what you're doing when I'm not in the room.
Ooh, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. Like if you're doing it when I'm there, then it's a performance thing and you're trying to prove something to me. Like, I don't need to know that. What I need to know is, are you trying to prove that when I'm not there and you're in other spaces where you have the power to be like, oh, actually, what you're saying, it's like, that the whole movement of like, when I think a classic example and an easy way to kind of relate it back is if you are a man and you're in like that whole like locker shop mm-hmm. talk bullshit thing. Yep. If you are surrounded by people locker who are saying, shop. Yeah, whatever. Think I just, yeah. Locker room. That's what I wanted. If you are in that space with other men and you're talking like other people down or like bullying or talking women down, then you, if you know that that is not right and you don't agree with that, then say something. Like yeah. you don't, a fat person doesn't have to be in the room. Yeah.
Uh-huh. 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 It's, yeah. A woman doesn't have to be in the room for you to be a feminist. Like, yeah. A fat person doesn't have to be in the room for you to be a fat ally. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about our definitions of fat. Because if my Instagram stories taught me anything, it is that there are several pretty distinct categories, that I think people as a whole tend to categorize themselves in. Mm-hmm. There's a very different view from those on the slimmer end to those at the bigger end and what they think of each other. Mm. Very, very interesting. What did you find through your conversations?
Ooh, I had a lot of people, or a couple of people rather, come in and be quite apologetic from the get-go, this thing of like, I'm not too sure if I'm like the size that you want to hear from or talking about, but and whether or not I like fit in this body positivity movement and if it's like for me, and just so much thing of like, I don't think I'm enough to be a part of this because I think the definitions around all of it and who should be included are so skewed and change depending on your size and who you're listening to and how you feel about your own body. Because like realistically, the sizes that we're at, we have the privilege of being on the smaller end in comparison to like fatter bodies who
definitely
just don't have like have so many more restrictions and barriers because the world isn't created for them.
Well, I think you've sort of hit the nail on the head there. It's that the world isn't created for them. And to me, it seems like that's where the line is. There's people that the world doesn't fit. They don't fit the world doesn't fit them. Those people, I found that anyone in that category considered anyone under that category to be thin fat or have thin privilege, which I can totally understand. Like if you, you know, as I said, if you've never been refused a seat, if you've never not been able to get the car, if you've never experienced that, then you really can't relate to what it's like to move through. You know, and this is coming from someone who, of course, I cannot relate. I can empathize and I can see all of the issues. Can I fix them? No. Can I talk about them? Yes. I had a lot of people who I would consider to be, I guess, plus size.
Okay.
For me, I consider plus, you know, personal, I would consider plus size to be, I mean, personally, I would probably say 14 plus.
Yeah.
But even then.
Which is fucked because the average size in Australia for women is 14 to 16. Sizing changes depending on what store you walk into.
Yeah. And it's like, and I guess the only reason that I say that is because that's what clothing stores have taught me.
Yeah.
Is that as soon as we get to the 14 plus, then we go into the curvy section. Mm. But let's fucking not miss the point here that the curvy section generally goes up to an 18, a 20 if you're lucky. I have seen a 22 in some places. Have I ever seen a size bigger than that? No. Like, am I actively looking? No. But are those sizes represented? Are they in commonplace? Are they on mannequins? No.
No. They're also stock standard and don't account for differences in where that weight is being held.
Oh, like, please.
Am I considered curvy? I don't have breasts. Like, I mean, I do, but they're tiny and they're not the norm. Like, they're not what you usually see on the size, like 18, 20, 22, whatever.
But again, like, look at the language you're using. You're using words like normal. Like, you can, and I guess that this is kind of something that I want to stress as well. Like, you can be the wokest, most active, body positive feminist / brilliant person. I'm not going to say we all make mistakes, but I'm saying that we have all been brainwashed to a point where society's ideals are so deeply embedded in us that it is a constant effort to fight against that. This is a revolution. Like, fighting against your inner monologue is the revolution.
Yeah.
And, you know, you saying something like that, it's more of a reflection on what society's taught you about yourself than what your values about yourself actually are, I think.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Sorry, continue.
No, I had nothing else. Yeah, you continue.
Yeah, I feel I would never consider sizes yet. I mean, to me, I wouldn't start referring to people as quote unquote fat until they were like over a size 18, maybe 20.
Okay.
I mean, so I don't even know. Like, does does clothing sizes even have anything to do with it? Because like my wardrobe, if you went through all the clothes in my wardrobe, I've got sizes 8 to 20.
Yeah.
In all different styles of clothes, and they have all fit me at one time or another. There's also clothes that I wear today that I have from a size 12 to a size 20 that all fit me today as I am. That's a pretty big fucking gap, like, yeah, that you want one body to fit into. It's almost like the numbers are an issue as well. And I guess because it's not a universal sizing system either.
Yeah.
You go to the UK and all of a sudden you quote unquote feel fatter because all of a sudden you're wearing bigger sizes. You go to America and and that's like a whole nother ball game. But
yeah, it's so roundabout and it's so individual, but it's also this collective thing of the society that we live in, like just kind of the Western society that we live in, let me rephrase, propagates this and thrives off of it, particularly just capitalism, man, just capitalism. Yeah. Capitalism is fucked. I hate it. It needs to end. And beauty standards are like ridiculous and just, oh my God. I have 23 years of thinking around this and none of it is conclusive.
But, you know, like that's like this whole podcast, none of it is conclusive. It's all just discussion. It's all just different points of view. And we definitely figure things out as we go as well. Have you ever experienced, and of course you don't have to talk about this if it's upsetting, but if you want to give maybe like an anecdote or a time where you felt like body shamed or you felt like you didn't fit in.
Oh, man.
A bit of a poignant one maybe from the last couple of years.
Hey. I'm not really good at like pinpointing specific moments.
Sure. And you know what? I think that the fact that I can pinpoint a specific moment is a testament to my privilege because it has happened to me a few enough times for me to really remember and those to stand out to me. It doesn't happen to me every single day like it does to other fat people. So I think that, yeah, that's a testament to my experience. So do you remember, I'm going to call them out. You remember the, it's actually Australian fashion labels. I'm doing it. They had Bunker. It was like BNKR at the end of Rundle Mall.
Yeah.
So I was booked to host Adelaide Fashion Festival. I would consider myself quite a fashionable young lady. Am I fashion forward? No. Do I make up my own rules? Yes. Is that how it should be? Yes. But look, we were being quote unquote dressed by Australian fashion labels. So we were told to go into the shop and there was four of us, four girls, and we all had to have matching outfits. Mm-hmm. We were told to go into Bunker and the girls were going to help us all get matching clothes. So we all walk in and we're all, you know, browsing, looking around. I immediately know that they will not stock my size. At the time, I would say I was wearing a 12, 14. For reference, I have got a size G chest. So on the bottom half, I'll wear smaller. In the top half, I often need a much, 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 much larger size, which I will then often have to alter, which is fine. Well, I mean, it's not fine, but that's the way that it has been.
Yeah.
So I've accepted that. Anyway, so not even 5 minutes into this shopping experience, and one of these sales assistants comes up to me and gives me this awful little up lip turned thing and just kind of went, what size do you wear? It's really high pitched. And I was like, oh, like I could maybe fit in a 12. Like that is a stretch. Like, can I fit? And I was like, I can maybe fit a 12. And she was like, she yells from one end of the store to the other, to the girl at the back and goes, do we have anything that will fit this lady?
Oh my God.
I nearly died. I'm in there with these. Meanwhile, the three other girls that I'm working with who are all, I wouldn't have, I mean, obviously I have no idea what I look like, but I wouldn't have said they were that much slimmer than me. Like, but obviously I think it's my chest that does it a lot of the time. But again, I've got no sense of it. It was really difficult. Basically the whole thing was a fucking mess. I had these awful sales assistants like coming in and being like, you can maybe try this, but this is the biggest that we stock. And it was all really, really awful. And I was crying in the change rooms and just trying to be all cool in front of the other girls because obviously they were all like fine. But I felt like I was ruining their experience because their dresses all had to match whatever would fit the big girl, you know?
Yeah.
So we ended up splitting and doing two outfits. And they were all horrible, like awful. They're all fast fashion anyway, like fuck you. But anyway, and I told my boss, who we've referenced before, Peter Ann, what a fucking legend. whose main goal it is to have safety within the workplace.
Yeah.
Small plug, I've actually started their podcast. So Peter Ann was so empathetic and so furious on my behalf. She assured me that that was not okay, that I was right to feel how I felt. She validated me. She went into bat for me. She went and she spoke to them. She told them it was inappropriate. She told them we would not be dressed by them again.
Yeah.
And she really stood up for me. And I, when I felt like I was so nervous to even tell her, but I felt like I had to explain why we were all in such shitty outfits.
Yeah.
And yeah, and I guess having someone to support me to, you know, go in and tell these ladies off made me feel so empowered and made me feel like I had the upper hand.
Yeah.
And it was like, yeah, you're the minority. You, we are skinny, body shaming, mean, like you are the bad people. I'm a good person. Peter Ann is a good person. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. It was a really poignant moment, and it's something I think about a lot. And I think about, imagine that every time you walk into any store ever.
Oh yeah. So like as you're telling the story, I'm like, I know what stores stock my size and I know what stores that I will avoid. And that is one of the stores that I have never walked into, because even just from the outset, you look at it and you know that like there's nothing in there for me. Like
they told me they don't stock a 12. Like when they're like, oh, we stop at 10. They go, oh, we stop at 10. And I said, and they're like, we can sometimes order in extras, but a lot of them don't make them plus a 12. God. I was like, this is fucked. Oh my God. Like,
that, like how?
So your fashion brand is targeting the minority because, as you said, the average size is 14 to 16. So a lot of these fashion brands are targeting, you know, upper middle class, slim, often white women. Like,
yeah.
And then I think especially lately they will have a token, not even a token Indigenous person, but a person whose skin isn't a perfect shade of porcelain.
Yeah.
Might be a caramel or something. And there we are. That's your diversity box ticked.
Mm.
So a little side note, but something I thought was interesting. Somebody messaged me and thanked me for being so vocal and open and honest about the topic. And I was really quick to dismiss it. So, yeah, no worries, of course, whatever. And then they brought up a really good point that not everybody feels safe, comfortable, or quote unquote brave enough to often speak their opinions. And that's something that I really honestly hadn't considered all that much, because I am so outspoken and loud and confident in my beliefs, and I do believe in lame, but you know, being the change you want to see. And I've said it before that no change ever comes without controversy, and I'm more than happy to be that controversy. I'm happy to have discussion. And I guess, yeah, the idea of people not feeling safe or having a safe enough platform to do that really hadn't occurred to me. So I thought that was incredibly interesting. And then they said, because I asked, you know, what are the things that stop you from, interesting topic, as always, my, you know, on these topics, my inbox is a space for discussion and debate and never, ever one-sided opinions. So we got talking and they said that a lot of the time they fear being wrong or having an opinion that is unpopular.
Okay.
And that was really interesting, because I guess it's like, you, before you make a statement on anything. So obviously before I made my statements about body issues, I only made those because I was pretty confident that the people who follow me on social media would agree with my opinion and would want to support and debate it.
Mm.
I wouldn't have posted that if maybe a couple of years ago, if I thought I wouldn't have had the same reaction. So maybe I can only talk about this so openly and honestly because I feel like I have a safe space and a safe environment. We discussed being wrong, and I think that that's a really big thing, especially in political issues, that people get really caught up over being wrong and having an opinion and feeling like I have to be steadfast in that.
Yeah.
And I kind of made up this little analogy, and I just said, like, look at your opinions as being the ocean. All of the information and different situations, they come in waves, and it all changes the sand beneath the ocean floor, you know, creating new opinions, new pathways, new divergence. And I guess that's the way that I like to look at these topics and these conversations. Like, I have my opinions that I've formed from my life through this podcast, through these conversations that you and I have both had with a whole multitude of other people. Opinion and interest I've had so much food for thought from so many people. It has changed my opinion. I would say that I am less assertive about my frustration
yes.
And I feel like I am a lot more understanding post these conversations that, yeah, we do all need role models, and that is a completely fair and valid thing. And I guess I need to be more specific in my rage in that it is the marketing, self-love, etc., for personal gain. That's what my real issue sort of is.
Yeah.
It's certainly been fucking fascinating.
Yeah. It's interesting because, like, when I decide to use my platform, the little thing that it is, to talk about stuff, it's always things that I have looked into or have personal experience through or, like, have educated myself on, or I will, like, be all like, hello, I'm not the person to be talking about this, but here is someone who is talking about this and has the right to and knows it. But when it comes to body, I always stop. Like, it's the one topic that I'm like, oh, no, no. Like, I just don't divulge in. Like, I'll share posts about it and, like, things that other people have said, but I'll never talk about it myself. And
do you think that's because it's, like, an issue that's so close to home, or?
And I think it's something that's, like, so me talking about it openly on Instagram last night was, getting uncomfortable thinking about it now. It was so bloody vulnerable, and I have issues of vulnerability. Fuck.
Yeah.
as we know. And I think there was this bit that I said in it of, like, one of the things holding me back is giving, like, kind of just opening up the gates for people to feel like they have a right of an opinion on my own body, which they don't.
Yeah.
But me putting it online allows people to, like, lets people feel like they have that opinion or the right to voice that opinion, which, like, yeah, you have the right to voice your own opinion, but don't be a bigot.
I think that's a super good point. And it's actually similar, I think, to being queer in a way I'm sure that a lot of queer people have this memory. It's, a quote that I've seen somewhere. It's, you remember when you were younger and you saw that overtly gay, fabulous person out in the street or doing whatever they were doing. And for a lot of people, they look at that person and that person gives them permission to be themselves. If that person is being outlandish and queer and using all these quote unquote feminine mannerisms, maybe I can do that.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe it gives permission to this little boy to see this drag queen and say, maybe I want to dress up, you know? And I know that's how I felt when I was growing up. And there are still, you know, I still follow their Instagrams today, but there are these iconic, who I would consider to be like fashionistas in Adelaide, who are really unique and not white. So I guess that's why they're so interesting in their fashion. And they gave me permission when I was younger to dress how I wanted to.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, because I see them walking down the street and I go, holy shit, you look incredible. Like, I'm not looking at them and going, oh, they're dressed differently. And I understand that some people do think that, and that's fine, because I know how much joy and confidence it gave me when I was a young person, and I would love to be that for other people. I'd love for my personality and my way of being to give people permission to be themselves. And I think that's how it is about fat bodies as well. Like, having a fat body, talking about your opinions, gives other people the right to do that and to delve into it a little bit more. Like, sometimes you just feel like you need a permission, even though you don't, and it's ridiculous. Like, sometimes as humans, we've been conditioned so much to only do things that we're allowed to do, and being scared of your body is, I think, really taboo subject.
Yeah, that's really interesting in terms of queerness, because, like, I think my queerness is something that that is still quite relatively new to me, but I'm so outspoken about it, because I think so when I realized that I was queer, I was 19. So, like, not in high school, skipped that whole, like, all of my high school issues were body issues. And then, like, found myself volunteering for an organization where most of the people within that were queer. Well, hilarious, was not a queer organization. And then just kind of, like, found myself being uplifted and supported by these communities, and then found that I was a minority in that community, and then just, like, kept fucking talking about it. And I've had really good responses from that. Like, that's never something I've been hesitant about, and I've been quite outspoken about. Not outspoken, just loud about it. I'm not speaking out of turn. I'm just being loud.
But, and you have every right to.
Thank you. But when it comes to body, I don't know. I've always just kind of, like, should I? Like, do I need to? Does my voice need to be in this conversation? And then I think the questioning that I have about it, and I've been cycling around this for the last like 3 or 4 years, so this whole thing of like, maybe I will post about fashion on my Instagram, which I have been saying
we've
for
been
years.
Talking about that. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I think the thing that holds me back is not wanting to put my body in that space, but also knowing that I don't see bodies exactly like mine. It's like, I don't see tall plus size women. I don't see plus size women with small boobs. Like, I don't see that. And I especially don't see that in the context of like ethical fashion and trying to actively find ethical fashion in a bigger body. Like, that's just not a huge thing. I don't know. It's almost like I need someone to give me permission to be able to do that before I'm able to give myself permission to do it.
Yeah. And so do you think that if you had seen, or maybe if you follow more Instagram accounts or more social media of bodies that you feel represent you, do you think that that would encourage you more?
I think it, no, because that would be like, oh, someone else is doing that, I don't need to.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I think I'd need someone to be like, hey, Caitlin, it'd be great if you did this. That's what I'd need. I'd need that push of like, there is a demand for it that is outside of my own little vision world. And then also
I've said this before, and here's me telling you that I think that you are very sophisticatedly dressed.
Oh, thank you.
I think you always put yourself together very well. And I personally would love to see some of your outfits. I think almost every time you've come into the studio, I have really complimented your look. I've really been into it. It's always been unique. You've never worn the same thing twice. You don't necessarily have to start an Instagram. Like, this is what I'm saying. Like, you don't have to start a body positivity movement to be body positive.
Yeah.
Maybe you don't start a whole new fashion Instagram, but maybe you just start a story highlight.
Yeah.
And you just start there and just add some of your looks. You can publicize it or you can not, and make it just for you as like a record of you looking back, and you can say, oh yeah, look at that look. Like, it's for you. It's not for anyone else.
Yeah. Ugh. That just seems so self-indulgent. This is all the thinking in my head.
Yeah.
It's like an onion,
and I get it, and this
has layers,
and this is like so many people's thinking, like, on especially on body image, like, do I have the right, do I this, do I that, like. And it's interesting, because then I spoke to someone else who would consider themselves plus size, and we talked about some of those other accounts where you're seeing the other extreme of, you know, my 600-pound life. And those really, really intense, really detrimental, you know, they are medical emergencies. And I feel like the thing that I want to make so clear in those situations to anybody that might have, I mean, they're probably not listening to this podcast, but to anybody that has a different opinion, those people are not struggling with being fat. They're struggling with addiction. They are struggling with mental ill health. Their problem isn't their weight. That is not the problem. That is not the thing that needs fixing. Like, lipo and plastic surgery will not fix that. Nobody gets to be, I know I'm just using 600 pounds like that, a reference, but nobody becomes that unwell and overweight without issues, addiction issues, substance issues, self-love issues, discussion issues, vulnerability, you know, like, it's a whole big mental health pit in there. And I think there are so many people who are so quick to just dismiss it. And I feel like people who are, you know, I'm going to say bigger than like a size 28 or whatever, I feel like are erased. We just erase them because a lot of the time they are housebound. A lot of the time they are not represented because they're not out and about. And I think that, yeah, we erase them. We don't consider them. Nobody makes clothes for them. Everything they do is special and different and has to be made specially for them. And that's the most alienating thing in the world. Like, they're already in such a different, vulnerable position. And as a society, we don't even, they're invisible to us. I don't know about you, but not a single person who reached out to me had anything to say about anyone who was a size, you know, bigger than a size 20 or something.
Yeah.
That's where the conversation seemed to stop. And that's because I guess that's the representation. They're the people that follow me.
Agreed. Same. Yeah. There was an article sent by someone, which I sent to you, which talked a lot about how there is privilege within the fat community as well, and that ties into the different levels that we were talking about before. All a case-by-case basis, not that we're all cases.
No,
but it's different and fluctuates, and like, oh my God, the whole conversation of health then it is a whole other thing.
Absolutely.
Because you can be fat and healthy at the same time. Like, how you weigh does not align to your health. Like, it's they don't match.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think I did have some feedback, even though they weren't the people that we were sort of asking to hear from, I did have some feedback from people who are on the complete opposite end of the spectrum and who have been skinny shamed or have been like diet culture shamed. Obviously, that's not the conversation that we're necessarily having today, but it does fall under the body positivity, body acceptance category. It is a completely different social thing, but we see now as thick is becoming quote-unquote popular and desirable, those quote-unquote skinny people who have struggled to gain weight in the past are now feeling even more isolated and even more like they are, you know, I've got the body of a 12-year-old boy, or like I'm not sexy, or I don't have any curves. And then we see this whole trend in these body-changing cosmetic procedures a lot of the time, as we said before, emulating the original movement, which is Black women, and trying to emulate their bodies and their styles and their personalities and stealing their identities. And while I don't doubt at all that it is difficult for everybody to accept their bodies, I do think it is important. And again, it's all relative. It's all relative. If you are on the thinner end and you find yourself engaged in a body positive, body centric conversation, it's probably not the time to talk about skinny shaming experiences when somebody is telling you about their negative fat experiences.
Yeah.
I know it might feel like you can understand and it might feel like you have a way to connect and a way to understand, but you can listen and empathize without telling your story.
Yeah.
Because I can tell you now, you know, somebody who has never been able to find the item clothing to fit them in their life doesn't want to hear about how you fit into kids' clothes.
Yeah.
And that's tough. Like, and that's, you've obviously got to pick your audience, and everyone has the right to talk about their issues in a safe and comfortable. I'm just saying, maybe check yourself. Is that a safe and comfortable space for the other person?
Yeah. I think with this, it's very much a thing of like, there are so many different layers of like, there's your experience and the experience of the person you're talking to, but there's also the whole world and what the whole world then views those two different types of bodies. Yes. And that plays into that.
Oh my God, preach, yes.
Yeah, so how the world views and treats a thin person is going to be completely different to how the world views and treats a fat person. And even if it is your own personal experience, that is then skewed by what the world is saying around that. Like, your experience is still valid, but you also have to then put into the account, like bring into account what the rest of the world is thinking and saying about that other person.
Yeah, it's just checking it's taking a moment to check your privilege again.
Yeah.
Yeah, and definitely, like, and I, on the note of talking about privilege, I guess I want to use this as an opportunity to check my privilege when it comes to sobriety. I, you know, by all standards, a pretty easy go of it. I have not had to be homeless. I have not had to be out of a job. I have not had to be fired from a job. I've been drunk at work before and had people notice and still not send me home. Whereas if I was from a different ethnicity or a different class, maybe I would have lost my job. Maybe I wouldn't have been paid for that. Maybe my reputation would have been tarnished. I have behaved appallingly. I'm so embarrassed and ashamed of a lot of my behavior especially through 18 to 22, really. And everyone forgave me for everything. And no one ever told me off, and no one ever really pulled me aside. No one ever told me that this is unacceptable and has to stop. Whereas I think society, we look at so many people that we see having a drinking problem and we don't even consider that they need help. We just think like, oh, you know, this person or these kids drinking, bunking off school and drinking down the park, or those Indigenous people in the park like drinking, or we have to close bottle shops so that, you know, addicts can't get it. It's this bizarre conversation that's totally skewed. And it's the same with drug culture as well. Like, you know, if you're addicted to cocaine and you're a CEO, that's totally fine. But if you smoke pot and, you know, you're a 17-year-old Indigenous boy, you're going to jail.
Yeah.
Look, again, it's all political, but I think if this shows us anything, it's that body image is a political issue. It is. It's a complete universal situation that is affecting every single person of every single gender, and however they identify, no one is, I guess, safe from it. And I guess there is no, I guess, resolution to this discussion. It's just been a space for us to share some of the experiences that we've heard from other people, some of our experiences, and hopefully just get everyone to check our privilege a little bit, put ourselves in other people's shoes. As Caitlin said, like, find those voices that you can relate to. We don't have the answers.
No, if anyone ever thought this was a podcast that you can find answers from, I'm sorry, you've read us wrong.
Why am I like this? We provide no answers.
Yeah. I think this is a conversation I'd be keen for us to keep having, both through this podcast and online as well. You can definitely slide into my DMs at kaelmoco, that's CAELMOCO on Instagram.
Yeah, probably don't slide into my DMs. I'm done. You can email us at justwhypod@gmail.com, or you can slide into our Why Am I Like This Pod Instagram. But my personal Instagram / business Instagram is for discussing things that I have brought up on the day. Everyone's pretty good. I'd like to say as well that all of our followers have, and all of our new followers and everyone has been extremely respectful and wonderful to me. And I'm loving some of the new listenership that we have, because the 90 Day Fiancé, we've got some American listeners. So hello, America. And I think the further globally this spreads, the more sort of interesting feedback that we get as well.
Yeah, definitely. Do you have a saying for the episode?
This is the only body you've got.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to leave it at that.
Okay, cool.
It's interesting. Also, I don't know what this is, a little quick little tangent before we wrap off. Exercise. So I'm someone that used to be really, and Caitlin looks terrified. I'm someone that used to be like really, really, really athletic. And I won lots of awards and I traveled internationally and I like played state and national for a lot of sports. I know, wild. I know, you never know.
Nice.
I was vice captain of the national netball team when I was like a child.
Oh my God.
Yeah, truly. Yeah. I've lived 1 million lives.
Yeah, I was going to say.
It's wild because I had so many dislocations and injuries, et cetera, that really should have got my Ehlers-Danlos diagnosis caught a lot sooner, but didn't. But that's fine. That's the general gist. My point being, when I got to the age when I just realized alcohol was more important than anything else and I fell off the exercise bandwagon completely, like, I've stayed more or less similar fluctuating size. I mean, who knows? I don't know. But I guess, you know, when you go to the doctor and they say, and your mental health's bad, and they're like, have you been doing any exercise? And you're like, no, fuck you, Carol. I don't want to do any exercise. I want to lay in bed and cry. Well, it wasn't until, as we know, I'm such a Pilates advocate and we've touched on this before, but it really wasn't until I got consistently into Pilates and I was like, God damn it, that endorphins thing is real and it's so annoying. Uh-huh. And it's like, yeah, Caitlin's giving you a face. And it's like, you hate it when they're right. Like, I don't want to exercise. I don't want to do that. I know that, like, running is fun and you'll enjoy it and all this shit. But for so long, I've made so many excuses, like, oh, well, I get vertigo when I run. So, oh, well, I don't want to dislocate my knee. Oh, well, I don't want to. And it's like, excuse, excuse, excuse. And that made me feel better about it because then it wasn't my fault that I was unfit. Like, I'd made all these virtual excuses as to why I couldn't do it. And then when I did start doing Pilates and I did start getting into such a better mental headspace and I really, really, really did see the difference, it's annoying, but it's made me be like, okay, all right, if you've done it once, you can do it again. Like, you just have to get back on the exercise. And it doesn't have to be running or swimming or cardio or weights. You know, you can, I'm talking like sitting on the couch and just doing some ankle flexes, like doing some ankle rolls, like just using your body. It doesn't matter what size you are, just to like get a neck roll, just to roll those shoulders, stretch those arms out.
I think it's this thing of like our bodies are made for movement and you don't need to exercise for the health of it. You can exercise just for the sake of it and for the movement's sake of it. Like, dancing's a fucking exercise.
Like, dancing's the best. Even, like, when I had my broken ankle, I think we talked about this before, I did so many business boogies. I couldn't move my legs, but in bed I would have my top half going, just, like, little wiggles, a little party. Like, just because those endorphins of just hearing happy music and getting a bop on, like, it really does or can help turn your day around.
Yeah.
Well, this has been a really intense chat.
It has. I'm just, like, on the access thing, like, but because I moved before the festival, across the road from my new apartment is a gym with a pool in it, and I fucking love swimming. And all I want to do is go for a swim, but I can't.
I'll go swimming with you. I live for it.
Yes, cute. Well, like, once this is all over and we can fucking leave. Oh, it's so annoying.
Do you know what keeps scaring me, though, is everyone keeps saying when this is over. And I'm like, you know, that could be, like, years from
Please
now.
Please
like,
don't. I know. Okay, sorry. Seeing that flight thing and just, like, knowing that I probably won't be able to spend Christmas with my parents this year is just a time. And yeah, no thank you. Not engaging.
See, that's interesting. Like, I was like, ooh, Christmas is cancelled this year. I was like, I win.
Look, I'm going to say a thing about that. My little thing of the week is to be gentle with yourself in terms of, like, how you think about your body, how you're treating yourself and productivity in terms of this time. Just, like, be gentle with other people. Just be gentle.
Be kind. Relax.
Yeah.
Well, as always, we are Caitlin and Tash, yours in sobriety and positivity.
Yes.
Signing off today's episode and looking forward to seeing you all next week.
All right. Goodbye. Bye. If you've been affected by anything said in this episode, please contact Lifeline at 13 11 14 or www.lifeline.org.au. Why Am I Like This is a Wickedly Good production produced by Caitlin Ellen Moore and hosted by Tash. The audio for this podcast was recorded and edited by Ryan Martin John. The Why Am I Like This jingle was created by Annie Siegman and Ryan Martin John. Why Am I Like This was recorded and produced on Kaurna lands, and we pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. Thanks for listening.